This is 60,000. I'm Darren Saunders. This episode is entitled The 12th of April. Before the 12th of April 1961, no one had slipped the bonds of Earth's atmosphere. For as long as there had been humans capable of curiosity, there have been minds that have wanted to know what's up there. For hundreds of years, we have had the technology to look to the stars, to speculate what we might find up there. But actually getting there was always beyond our capability. Until the 12th of April, 1961. Before then, the closest we could get to the heavens was in an aeroplane. Supersonic jets were being used at this time, almost exclusively in the pursuit of deadlier wars, although development of what would become the Concorde was well underway by now.
In a few years' time, the sight of Concorde on international airfields all over the world will be commonplace if all goes well. Then there'll be 130 passengers on board. Flying times will have been cut by half. London to New York from 7 hours 40 minutes to 3 hours 25 minutes.
But still, being able to scud along just above the troposphere at a maximum speed of 1700 kilometers an hour might have been thrilling, but it wasn't space. It was 85 kilometers short of space, in fact. We had made it a little over 15% of the way to the stars, and that was not enough. But on the 12th of April 1961, our status as a planet-bound species changed, because that was the day we strapped a man into a rocket of aluminium and titanium and steel, plastics and fabrics, ceramics and a whole host of man-made materials, lit the touch paper and watched him fly into space and into the history books. Designs dreamed up by humans, parts engineered by people, trajectories calculated by biological supercomputers, each with their own families, hopes and dreams. All of this combined into what was, and still is, one of the most remarkable feats of human curiosity and perseverance. Yuri Gagarin, a 27-year-old Soviet pilot from the village of Klushino, a village so small and anonymous that its Wikipedia page is two short paragraphs, one to outline its geographical location within Russia and that it was the site of a battle in 1610, another to link it to Gagarin. His former home is now a museum to his short but momentous life. A little less than 9 years from his world-changing journey, he'd be dead, killed in a routine training flight that may or may not have been caused by out-of-date weather information, and maybe even technical error by the ground crew. Gagarin would be cremated, his ashes interred in the Kremlin Wall, alongside the likes of the writer Maxim Gorky and Georgi Dobrovolsky, Vladislav Volkov and Viktor Patsayas, the three-man crew of the Soyuz 11 mission that ended in their deaths as they attempted to return home from the cold, unforgiving darkness of space. Just across the way from Yuri's interred ashes lie the final resting places of Russia's leaders, Stalin, Brezhnev, Chernenko, among others. Gagarin was a national hero. No, Gagarin was a global hero. Yuri Gagarin was the astronaut that children dressed as for those brief 3 weeks in 1961 when he was the only human to ever see our planet from such a high vantage point. Nearly a month later, Alan Shepard would climb into the Freedom 7 capsule in Cape Canaveral in Florida, where he too would be fired into the sky in the spirit of science and learning.
On the periscope, what a beautiful view.
What a beautiful view.
Cloud cover over Florida, 3 to 4 tenths near the eastern coast, obscures up through Hatteras. They can see Okeechobee. Identify Andros Island.
3 to 4 tenths cloud cover.
Identify
the
reef
of the United States, obscuring the eastern coast up through Cape Hatteras.
Shepard rocketed through space for 15 minutes. Gagarin was up there for 108, nearly 6,500 terrifying seconds, all for our benefit, and all on the 12th of April, 1961. If it hadn't been Yuri Gagarin, it would have been another cosmonaut, and if not a cosmonaut, an American astronaut. Mankind's ascent into space was inevitable from the moment we first developed rockets with explosive warheads for the destruction of others, From the moment we first saw the kind of thrust we could engineer with the help of the controlled explosions of refined oil. From the 37-meter flight of the Wright brothers Flyer 1 in 1903, and the knowledge that humans could propel themselves into the sky, it was only a matter of time before we took to the heavens. And many died in the pursuit of the bragging rights. Wikipedia lists 86 human deaths as a direct result of the development and testing of rocket technology between 1930 and 1960. Did those people die in order that we could ultimately use the fruits of their labours to download this week's big TV show without having to leave our sofas? Perhaps not, but they have become a tragic footnote in the history of the 20th century's race to space. Today we take it for granted that people will be in space. As this podcast is being scripted, recorded, edited and uploaded, Jessica Meir, Oleg Skripochka and Andrew Morgan are 400 kilometres above our heads carrying out scientific experiments. They are four times higher than Yuri Gagarin and Alan Shepard flew 59 years ago and have been up there since February. They've been able to chat to people on Twitter, post photos on Instagram and video call their families at home. 60 years ago, we hadn't touched the upper atmospheres. Now we can live and work 400 kilometres in the sky and not bat an eyelid. And most days we don't even give it a thought. Do yourself a favour though. Next time it's a clear night and you're sat outside stargazing, have a look online to see if the ISS will be passing over your head. If it is, make sure to watch for it. Because the thrill of knowing what that fast-moving bright spot all the way up there in the blackness of the night is like nothing else. What does the future of our space exploration hold? Curiosity has been chuntering about on Mars for 8 years, taking photos and investigating the geological makeup of our planetary neighbour. Dotted about the place are several previous rovers, all of whom sent back data that Yuri Gagarin could only dream of. Next year, we will send Perseverance to Mars in order to gather even more data. It seems likely that humans will set foot on the red planet within my lifetime.
So I gotta make water and grow food on a planet where nothing grows.
So I'm gonna have to science the shit out of this.
And that is incredible, but also not. We're expecting it to happen. We've become resistant to the excitement of our capabilities. 117 years on from that very first flight by the Wright brothers, there are vehicles on another planet being driven around by people on Earth. That's absolutely mind-blowing, even at a time when we can open an app on our phones and a day later take delivery of almost anything we want, or download a movie that we already have on disc because it's easier than getting up and walking across the room to the Blu-ray shelf. Humans are incredible. Individually, we can make beautiful things, but collectively, we can work out how to put those beautiful things on another planet. We can eliminate diseases, we can adapt to hardships, we can extend our lifespans and those of the flora and fauna with which we share our world. Oftentimes, we forget this, or choose not to, but we have it in us to be amazing. And on the 12th of April 1961, we waved one of us off on the most important journey that any of us has ever taken. I, for one, cannot wait to do the same for those first people who choose to visit Mars on our behalf. As ever, thank you for spending some time with the fruits of my little passion project. I hope this podcast finds you well, in good health and good cheer. For myself, not much has changed. I'm still at work, I rarely go out to pubs anyway, and don't often make unnecessary journeys. Just about the only real difference is that now I have to queue to do my shopping. But I realise that I'm one of the lucky ones, and that many of you are struggling, so to you I offer these words. This too shall pass. Normalcy will return. You'll be able to visit your family and friends in time. Your job right now, if you're stuck at home, is to seek out things that soothe your mind. With this in mind, I can heartily recommend the new podcast from Melissa Harrison called The Stubborn Light of Things, which is a beautiful exploration of the countryside surrounding her Suffolk home. The sound design on it is wonderful.
Hi, how are you doing? I'm walking through a country churchyard. It's mid-morning, the sun's out, little bit of a breeze. In summer, this churchyard is an absolute riot of wildflowers, but it's still a little bit early in the year.
Also, the Memory Palace, if you've never heard of it.
This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DeMeo. A brief eulogy for a commercial radio station. Upon hearing that 95.5 WBRU-FM in Providence, Rhode Island, would cease operation.
Short episodes on an event or person from history, with a focus on America in the main. Nate DeMeo's presentation is calm and quiet, as is the production. A 10-minute story about people of whom you've likely never heard. I've loved that podcast for years now and recommend it wherever possible. Well, that's all for now. As ever, 60,000 is written, recorded, edited, produced, and uploaded by me, Darren Saunders, from my cozy armchair in the corner of my living room, all on my phone because I'm a lunatic. I'll see you again soon. And remember, look after your mind and the rest will fall into place.